The following program is underwritten by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. Welcome to Humanities Connection, production of WFDU-FM and the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. I'm Bob Mann. The Bethel AME Church in Morristown is a major part of Morris County history. It's the county's first black congregation, which is extremely appropriate because the New Jersey Council for the Humanities has issued a $10,000 action grant to Bethel AME Church to organize a series of public programs surrounding an exhibition about the history of free African Americans and race relations, both past and present, in Morris County. And my guest to talk about this is the Reverend Sidney Williams, who is the pastor of Bethel AME Church. Reverend, thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you. Glad to be a part of this morning.
Let's talk a little bit about something that I've been hearing from the Council for the Humanities going into 2018 as a theme in a lot of the grants that they give, and that is called Common Threads. Talk about Common Threads when it comes to the program that you're going to be doing on race relations and free African Americans coming up at Bethel.
Sure. So as we've been researching the history of this church, and considering some of the things that we're doing now to sort of build bridges in this community, we were surprised to find that many of the things we're doing are not new. One of the most interesting things we discovered in doing the research for this 175th anniversary is a book written called Out of the Briars by Alexander H. Newton, who was a former pastor of Bethel AME Church during the 1800s, who was a veteran of the Civil War. And he speaks very fondly of the pastor of the Presbyterian Church here in town. And apparently there were pulpit exchanges where he would go and preach at the Presbyterian Church during the early 1880s. So we thought that was fascinating. So the pastor of the Presbyterian Church currently and myself have discovered that our churches have had a long history together. And so it's been exciting to uncover that history and those common threads.
I take pride in knowing a lot about American history, but I really don't know enough, and it's a fascinating subject, African Americans who were free before both the Emancipation Proclamation and the 13th Amendment. The 13th Amendment is really what ended slavery in our country, because really what President Lincoln was doing with the Emancipation Proclamation was really more a wartime strategy than something permanent. So before 1865, you still had legalized slavery, but you did have free African Americans. Who were some of these people, and what was the type of life that they lived in New Jersey?
Sure. New Jersey is interesting in terms of northern states because it was, in fact, the last northern state to officially abolish slavery in 1865. However, there were both free and enslaved and indentured servant African Americans in New Jersey. As well as Native Americans who did not identify necessarily as Native Americans, but remained in this community and worked alongside of free Africans.
Free African Americans, though, obviously they were still victims of racism, I would assume segregation. Because of fugitive slave acts, some of those laws had to make even a free African American feel a little bit nervous, even in a northern state. And it certainly was a better life than what their fellow Africans were living down south, but it could not have been the ideal full share of American citizenship.
So, as I understand it, prior to the Reconstruction period, which took place after the Emancipation, New Jersey really kind of explored laws of public accommodation of both black and whites in public spaces. And so New Jersey is unique in a sense that while it was wrestling with the national issues, it also tried to be a leader in terms of how to share public space. So in Morris County, it was very divided. There were some families that were pro-slavery, sympathized with the South, but there were an equal number of people that were pro-emancipation and identifying their neighbors, their African-American neighbors, as full citizens. So, in fact, in 1870, there was actually a law passed that gave black men the right to vote. And so there were a number of things that were kind of interesting during that time period. However, Frances Jane Ray started Bethel after leaving the Presbyterian Church in 1841. Her and her husband initially started this church in 1843. And they were able to construct their first church building in 1849. So that says quite a bit about the community here in Morris County and what they were able to accomplish, even during discussions about fugitives and chattel property and the Dred Scott case. There was a thriving African-American community here in Morris County.
And it was a weird period, as you mentioned, a transition. 1804, technically slavery was made illegal in New Jersey, but there were all kinds of exceptions that went right up through the Civil War, as you had mentioned earlier. But when we opened the segment, and of course this program is underwritten by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities, we mentioned this $10,000 grant, sure. A series of public programs surrounding an exhibition about the history of free African Americans and race relations. So give us an idea about some of these programs. And I just want to have you keep in mind that our initial broadcast is January of 2018, but we repeat programs in the summertime, and also the program remains at www.njhumanities.org, you know, in an archive. So this could be for immediate broadcast or going down the year.
Sure.
So what are some of the programs that, you know, you have, some of the specific things that are going to be used as part of the public programs and the exhibition itself?
Yeah, so we're going to start this year off with an unveiling of three historical panels that help the community understand both the connection, the organization of our congregation, and the commitment of our congregation. The first panel speaks to our connection to the Episcopal Church in England and its movement to the U.S. through the Methodist Church, or Bishop Asbury, and our first pastor, or Bishop Richard Allen, who started the AME Church in 1787. And a little known fact, Richard Allen, our founder, was the only African-American eulogist for George Washington. And so we want to share that history on February 4th, with the community about sort of how we got our origins, and then share here locally how the Bethel AME Church in Morristown came into existence from formerly Presbyterians with the support of both the Methodist and the Presbyterian Church. And then finally, we want to talk about our commitment of embracing those who migrated here from the South after World War I, and then talk about our commitment to embracing those who come here from other countries, from the West Indies, from Central and South America, to start new lives here. So Bethel has had a 175-year commitment to helping weary travelers that come to our community, and we're still doing that.
Let's talk a little bit about people actually getting a chance to go to the February program, because, as I said, our initial broadcast is in January. Some people hearing reruns are hearing it on the web, obviously. You know, that has already happened. But for those who are listening to the initial broadcast, how can they take advantage of this? We broadcast into New York City, other counties in North Jersey beside Morris. How can they get a hold of you and take advantage of the initial program that you just discussed?
Sure. The church is located here in Morristown, 59 Spring Street, Morristown, New Jersey. We are having a pulpit exchange with the Church of the Redeemer, the Episcopal Church, in memory of our founder, Richard Allen, and Absalom Jones, who became the first African-American priest in the Episcopal Church. So that congregation will join us on Sunday morning, February 4th at 10:30 for joint service. The Episcopal rector or priest will be the chief celebrant that day here at Bethel. So that's open to the public February 4th. Come and see the unveiling of the panels and to learn more about the relationship between the Episcopal and the African Methodist Episcopal Church.
And AME stands for African Methodist Episcopal. Now, among Protestant denominations, those seem like different denominations, but I guess there was a cooperation. How did the whole AME concept evolve years ago?
Sure. So John Wesley, who was an abolitionist and evangelist, some would say he was a theologian, but he was an Episcopal priest. And he started what was later become known as the Methodist movement. And so that name stuck. And in the United States, we had what was called the Methodist Episcopal Church, which is now known as the United Methodist Church. They changed their name in 1968. But prior to 1968, they were the Methodist Episcopal Church. And then in 1787, due to issues of race and discrimination, the African Methodist Episcopal Church was born. But we still share much of the Episcopal traditions, as well as the Methodist traditions. And then for the African Methodist Episcopal Church, we've embraced some of our own sort of African spirituality, the use of drums and more soulful or, what's the word?
Possibly contemporary, more relatable music and cultural
A little more lively.
Okay, all right, that's a good way to put it. One last thing. You mentioned that some of these programs have to deal with race relations past but also present in Morris County. What are some of the things that you're going to be tackling in terms of the present? Because obviously the humanities embraces so much of history, but yet history's real value is for the present day. So what might you be dealing with in terms of present-day race relations and those issues in Morris County, New Jersey?
So I think that the biggest challenge now, and this speaks to our second event on February 9th and 10th, the biggest challenge now is in our nation, we probably at this point are revisiting some of the divisions that we thought we had moved past around the issues of race. And so we've kind of lost the ability to have a conversation around these difficult issues. And so on February 9th and 10th, we're holding a facilitated dialogue here at Bethel, and we've invited persons from law enforcement, from public education, from the various communities of faith to engage in a dialogue, you know, and learning how to hear each other, as well as to share what needs to be said without being divisive or attacking, but learning the principles of nonviolent communication. You know, how can we be in community and do more than agree to disagree, but how can we appreciate the diverse views and live in community with each other? So we're going to host that conversation on February 9th and 10th as a part of this sort of celebration and with the support of the Humanities Grant. And we think that's an important conversation needs to be had.
There are so many important conversations, and it looks like you're tackling an awful lot. We really appreciate your being here and sharing with us on Humanities Connection.
Thank you.
And it's a grant to the Bethel AME Church to organize a series of public programs surrounding an exhibition about the history of free African Americans and race relations past and present in Morris County. Our guest has been Reverend Sidney Williams. You're listening to Humanities Connection, a production of WFDU-FM and the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. I'm Bob Mann. This program is broadcast on 89.1 FM, and then it's archived at www.njhumanities.org. And you can go to that website to find out about all of the interesting things which are done by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities, as well as hearing archives of Humanities Connection. One of the many things I love about hosting this program is that I find out about things that are not very far from my home, which are absolutely fascinating, things I never heard of before. One is a place called Grounds for Sculpture. You're going to find out about the place, but also about a program which is being funded by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. It's an action grant of $20,000 to create an in-gallery programming space that explores the narratives of African-American women. It's supported by a scholar in residence. She's one of our guests here on this segment, and it will serve as a platform for facilitated discussion, reflecting, and sharing. And on the phone right now is Heather Brady, Director of Education and Engagement for Grounds for Sculpture, Dr. Cassandra Jackson, who is that scholar in residence. And on a regular basis, Dr. Jackson is professor of English at the College of New Jersey. And also joining us is Patricia Matos, who is an executive assistant for Grounds for Sculpture. Let's start it off with Heather. Again, as I say, we're here in North Jersey where our radio home is, and we broadcast into New York City. Hamilton, New Jersey, down in South Jersey, is not that far. What exactly is the place called Grounds for Sculpture?
That's a great question. So Grounds for Sculpture is a 42-acre sculpture park. At any given time during the year, we have approximately or more than 270 works on view. We also have 6 indoor galleries here where we rotate special temporary exhibitions. And as our mission says, really what we are is a place dedicated to combining art and beckoning spaces to welcome, to surprise, to engage our visitors in the artist's act of invention.
Let's talk, though, a little bit about this particular grant. Dr. Jackson, Narratives of African-American Women, that's pretty broad. What exactly are you dealing with here? Are you talking about art, literature, sculpture? Where is this going when you're talking about narratives of African-American women?
Well, I think the story that actually grounds and centers the exhibit is a specific narrative of an African-American woman, and that's Harriet Tubman. And so she operates as a kind of jumping-off point, right, because her story is one that is about the history of African-American women, the history of African-Americans in this country, but it's also the story of hope and triumph, right? And so that's sort of our jumping-off point, the story of Harriet Tubman. And so this isn't just about her story, right? But it is about sort of the kinds of stories that inspire us. And that is very much about, right, the history of African-American women in this country.
When you look at Harriet Tubman specifically, what are some of the things that everybody's heard the name, but what are some of the things we may not know about her life, her work, and her legacy?
Most people don't know that she was a spy for the Union Army.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes, she was. Most people don't know. And that she ended up playing a huge role, in part because she could operate as a double agent. She was willing to go into spaces where there were enslaved African-Americans, and she could do it unnoticed because she would go there pretending as if she were just one of the slaves. And she was able to gather information that made the Union Army successful. It allowed them to get into spaces that they could not have gotten into without her willingness to go into places where she could have been enslaved herself. Remember, she spent her life as a fugitive.
Right. I mean, to think of the exposure, you're walking right back into the lion's den. That's mm-hmm. that's tremendous sacrifice, and that's wonderful. Now, before we began this interview, Cassandra, you mentioned to me that you're in a little bit of a different role here because very often a place like Grounds for Sculpture might have an artist in residence, but as a scholar in residence, you're really in the role of someone who shares information and someone who is a facilitator. Give us the scholar in residence role here in this particular project.
So this is an opportunity of a lifetime for me, just because most of the time as a scholar, you're on the outside looking in, right? You're trying to figure out what artists are doing. You're not usually the person who's always in conversation with those artists. And you certainly don't get to enter actual maker spaces and see artists work. So one of the most sort of profound moments I've had in this process was sitting down with the artist and her actually handing me her work, right? And which has said something about Joy Scott's work, the fact that it is something that can be handled in that way, in that she also has jewelry pieces, small pieces, as well as sort of large pieces like sculpture. And so this has been an opportunity for me to kind of enter a maker space, right, to become someone who's in conversation with that process. And that's something that scholars don't usually get to do. We're usually on the outside writing about it. The idea of sitting down with somebody who's doing the beadwork in front of you is amazing.
Let's just talk a little bit, Heather, about a program timeline. Our initial broadcast is in January of 2018, and we're reaching into the five boroughs of New York City as well as North Jersey, and then we'll be at njhumanities.org after that. We also repeat programs in the summertime. So give us a timeline that would deal with both our audience with the initial broadcast and those who could be hearing this 6 or 8 months down the line.
So for those who are listening to the initial broadcast, I'm excited to be able to say that the exhibition that this Action Grant project is centered around, Joyce J. Scott's Harriet Tubman and Other Truths exhibition, will be on view here at Grounds for Sculpture through April 1st. So if you're listening at the end of January, now is the time to make a plan, make a date, and come on over to see this incredible exhibition and participate in some of the programs that the New Jersey Council for Humanities is so generously also supporting, which are all sort of housed under an umbrella called Common Thread. So if you go to our website and you're curious about this exhibition and Harriet Tubman and the stories that Dr. Jackson was just talking a little bit about, look for Common Threads on our website to learn more. That said, if you are hearing about us for the first time in the summer, when this program again airs, summer is an amazing time to visit Grounds for Sculpture. In fact, spring, summer, and fall are sort of our high season. We have, as I said, 42 acres outdoors to explore, to look at the art we have, our horticulture collection. And also all throughout the year, and particularly in the summer, programs for people of all ages and every ability. So hands-on art-making workshops, outdoor film screenings, outdoor concerts in the summer. So many different things to do at any time of year. So whether you're hearing this again in the winter or in the summer, we hope you will come and visit.
And just in terms of the what we call in broadcasting the evergreen aspect of this, Dr. Jackson, which would be people learning more about Harriet Tubman, even beyond this particular thing we're promoting here in January of 2018 initially, films, books, biographies, what are some of the things, obviously, people, you know, are not going to immerse themselves to the point of becoming scholars themselves, but to find out about this amazing American life?
There's some interesting places to start, and there are a number of, actually, biographies that you could take a look at about Tubman's life. I do really want to encourage people to come to the exhibit as a beginning, in part because we actually have some pieces that you will not be able, in some cases, to see again. There's one sculpture of Tubman on site that is going to disintegrate on the spot. It's changing every single day, right, because it is made of earth. And other kinds of natural materials. And one of the things that, you know, the artist said about why she wanted that sculpture to disappear is because in many ways we've sort of forgotten the legacy of Harriet Tubman. As you pointed out, we know the name, right? But at the same time, what do we actually know about the figure? What do we know about the legacy? And the hope that she's represented, right, for so many African Americans. One of the biographies that I would recommend, though, would be James A. McGowan's book on Harriet Tubman, which is a biography, which would be a great place to start. And one of the things that people might want to take a look at is, and they can Google this, but there's a much more recent photo of Harriet Tubman that has emerged over the last year. And I think that many people would be interested in seeing it because most of the photos that we have seen of her have been photographs of her at the end of her life. And it is a photo that allows us to imagine what this woman who crossed those lines into Southern territory actually looked like at the time that she would have been doing it.
And we haven't had a chance to talk with Patricia yet, and I understand that you really do a lot dealing with the local community around Hamilton Township in Mercer County, New Jersey. Tell us a little bit about the role that you've played in all of this.
Sure. I'd be glad to. So I had the pleasure to work for local government for a time and also be civically engaged. So I know quite a lot of people in this particular area. And one thing that I know is there are a lot of makers and a lot of artists in the area who don't get a lot of attention in this particular area. A lot of these people travel to New York or travel across the country to be able to perform or present their work. And what I wanted to do is create more opportunities for these individuals locally. So through this, we had the opportunity to invite local artists and performers to narrate the exhibition through their eyes and help us to be able to bring together programming that can provide a space for celebrating, can provide a space for contemplation, and also a space for healing around the Joyce J. Scott exhibition. So I can talk very briefly about three of those programs, though there are many. And if you're interested, you can always look on our website and register for the programs through either our website, or you can always look up the programming through Facebook. Again, they're under the Common Threads programming. But just to give you an example, we wanted to create a space for celebrating because a lot of people don't understand, or we've done a really bad job of educating people that Black history doesn't start with slavery. So we wanted to make the connection to Africa. So with that, we have West African dance and drumming classes. We also wanted to provide a space for contemplation and reflection. So we actually have Life Stories of Harriet Tubman, which is basically storytelling from a first-person perspective. And the person who's actually telling the story is a relative, a descendant of Harriet Tubman. Her name is Louise Davis. And we also wanted to be able to provide a space for healing. And in March, we're going to have a series of yoga workshops. And it's important to have a series of yoga workshops to be able to provide that space for people to really absorb the exhibition and absorb the information that the exhibit presents, and to be able to internalize it, reflect upon it, and heal.
That's great. We only have 2 minutes left in the segment, and one of the things, Heather, that I had mentioned to you before we came on the air is I don't want to turn you into a GPS. But, you know, we have a little bit here in northern New Jersey and New York City, where the radio station is, a lack of knowledge about southern New Jersey. And you hear Hamilton, New Jersey, go, well, I don't know where that is. But it really, you told me, is not that far. So our listeners in the five boroughs and counties here in North Jersey, like Bergen, Passaic, Morris, Essex, and Hudson, really don't have a daunting task to get down to you.
They sure don't. So we're really in central Jersey, as you said, in Hamilton. And depending on where you're coming from, I mean, really, we're talking about a 75-minute trip, whether by car, whether coming by train. That's about what it's going to take, which is not that long. So in both cases, whether you're driving and you get on the turnpike and you end up on 95 and then 295, I'm not a GPS. I'm not going to give you all the turns and stops. But I'll just say that the minute you get off those major roadways, we are just minutes off of 295. And the same thing is true if you want to use New Jersey Transit. You're going to take New Jersey Transit to Hamilton. And again, we're about 5 minutes by taxi, by Uber, by the local bus from that Hamilton stop. So really easy in either case. And for more information on on how to get here, you can just visit our website at groundsforsculpture.org, and there you'll also find all of our links to other social media, you know, sort of networks and sites.
That's great. And I want to thank all three of you, Heather Brady, Dr. Cassandra Jackson, and Patricia Matos, for being here to talk about Grounds for Sculpture. That's it for this episode of Humanities Connection. I'm Bob Mann. Thank you very much for listening. This program is initially broadcast on WFDU 89.1 FM, and then it's archived at www.njhumanities.org. You can go to that website not only to hear archives of our program, but to hear about all of the fascinating programs that are being run throughout the state by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities.